Thanks for downloading Think from KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth. You can learn more and support this program at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Informal Courses for Adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How will 2007 go down in pop culture history? In a year where Harry Potter snagged more headlines than Harry Reid, and the must-have holiday toy is a Barbie doll-sized talking Jesus, it seems anything goes. So we have three expert guests in today to offer some much-needed perspective. Zach Crane is senior editor at D Magazine. Carrie Darling is the Fort Worth Star-Telegram's pop culture critic. And Andrea Grimes is a staff writer for the Dallas Observer. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
So maybe we can start with this month and sort of work backwards. What do you guys make of the new celebrity couple that I'm calling Oprah-bama?
I think they're very sexy.
They're going to have good-looking kids.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of what, this will be the first time Oprah's sort of popularity has been put to the test in sort of a political arena. So it'll be interesting to see what happens from this.
The funny thing about it is that when people are going to these things and they're showing up at these rallies, they're never talking about Barack Obama. The women that show up there talk about how they wanted to see Oprah in person.
Well, maybe she should run for president.
She might one of these days. Do you think that any of that could translate?
I mean, I think it could from what I saw on television. A lot of people there said they came to see Oprah, but they were impressed with Obama. So, maybe they will vote for him. If they weren't going to vote for him before, maybe they will think about voting for him now. But we'll see.
What do you guys think of the whole sort of politics as entertainment thing? Is it getting more intense now, or has it always been this way?
Well, I think the intense kind of media saturation we're seeing into every single aspect of everyone's, lives certainly makes it a little more intense. But I think maybe we shouldn't treat politics quite so seriously. I mean, it is kind of entertaining, right? And some of it is quite silly. So you might as well have fun with it.
You just have to have a different sort of personality now, because you have to be able to play on Daily Show, at least whenever the writer strike ends, and Colbert Report and things like that. I mean, you just can't have the flaws you used to. I mean, you might have a couple of blind spots in your personal life before. Now you have to pretty much scrub everything completely clean because of the blogs and just anything. I mean, everybody knows everything about your business, so you can't really, you're pretty much always campaigning.
Is that how it went for you?
Yeah.
Zach Crane ran for mayor, for anyone who has not
I had already done so much stuff. There was really all the things that people might not have liked about me I'd already pretty much done in public. So,
written about them yourself.
I'd either written about them or, when I hosted the Dallas Observer Music Awards, I traditionally got pretty drunk, and everybody always had a camera around. So, I mean, all my Gary Hart photos were already pretty much online. So I just had to, say, well, that was when I was 26 and 27 and 30. And
well, how old are you now?
33.
That's all in the distant past.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some hurdles to overcome. But I think, that was really at the beginning. A lot of people finally got past that and just kind of paid attention to what I was saying instead of, the person who was saying it necessarily.
So let's talk about the writer's strike. This is, it's been going now for, is it 4 weeks?
I think it's 5 weeks now.
5 weeks. Mm-hmm. Seems like a long time without any Daily Show sort of commentary that a lot of, younger Americans use as a basis, at least, for seeking out information. What's the long-term impact, do you think?
In terms of politics or just in terms of entertainment?
Socially, entertainment, politics, whatever direction you want to take it from.
Well, I think in terms of politics, people are still going to get a lot of that sort of snarky sort of entertainment, I think, just online now as opposed to, from Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart. In terms of entertainment, I think it's going to have long-term ramifications, especially since they ended apparently on a very bad note on Friday, and now they don't know when they're going to start talking again. So it's probably be at least several more weeks before they're even at the table. So it's not only going to start affecting, TV production, but probably film production as well. So I think it could be long.
I haven't noticed a lack of snark in my life.
Well, look where you work.
Right. Well, I don't know. I canceled my cable television this year, so I don't know. I get my snark online. I think a lot of people do. I thought that I was addicted to Grey's Anatomy, and now I realize that I can live without it. So the writer's strike is very sad, but at the same time, it might open up some new forums and some new ways of expressing. I know I've got a friend that works at UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade in New York, and they are putting on some awesome live shows, because the writers can't write for television, but they can write for the stage, and they're really putting on some cool stuff. So I don't know. It might be some good might come of the disaster.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how long this can go before the audience starts to depart permanently, if enough people find other things to do with those hours.
Yeah, during the last writer's strike, I think they lost several million viewers. That was in 1988, and that was well before the internet took off. So I think you're probably going to see at least something like that happen again.
Yeah, I think you'll see a significant drop-off, but people will still watch TV, and I think it'll just will probably hurt every scripted show, just because the TV, the networks will see that people watch all this reality stuff still. Those are cheaper to make, and, those will just get a stronger foothold. And, I think people tend to not want to put as many scripted shows back into production once it comes back around.
Because those shows still use writers, though, just not as many, is that right?
Well, they use writers, but they're not covered by the Writers Guild of America.
Okay, so more game shows, more Survivor, Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, they already are bringing back American Gladiators and things like that. So, I never thought something like that would ever come back, but,
it's got a second life.
Well, maybe we'll get more cheaters out of it.
Oh, yeah, it's filmed here, right? Yeah. I'm always trying to identify, not that I watch the show often, but it'll come on sometimes, and I try to identify the neighborhood, and see if I can figure out where all that is taking place. It's funny, people keep predicting the demise of television, and maybe there's a question of screen time, but it does seem like there might be the demise of the networks at some point, but it doesn't seem like people are going to be willing to give up sort of sitting down passively in front of some device and being entertained.
No, I think that'll always be television. I think it won't be necessarily network television. I mean, people will be downloading movies or other types of entertainment, on their TV screens or computer screens, but there will always be some form of television.
Do you guys think the writers stand a chance at getting what they want?
Probably not everything. Because one of the things they want is to organize the writers of animation and writers of reality TV shows, and the producers have said that's a non-starter. So, we'll see. They may get some things, but I don't think they're going to get everything.
They've already given up, they've already given up the points on DVDs, I believe, mm-hmm. just so they could get the online revenue, and nobody knows what that's going to be. I mean, there's still not, you have iTunes and things like that, but there still aren't, completely definable models of how this is going to work. I mean, how you're going to, people maybe still think of the Jetsons coming along and, just getting stuff downloaded into your, your computer right by your bed or something like that. So they don't know exactly how revenue is going to work. And I don't think they'd be willing to give up something they don't even know what's going to be.
Did anybody find it ironic that what finally killed Evel Knievel was diabetes?
I didn't know we were going to get dark already.
Oh, yes. do you guys remember? I'm older probably than all three of you, but do you remember him as a kid? I just remember Evel Knievel was the cool source of toys and talk, and people would take their bikes and ride up on trails and all that. There's nobody like that now.
Well, there's Robbie Knievel. I think what finally killed him is he finally made his peace with Kanye West, and he was free to move on to the next plane.
Well, it's nobody like Evel Knievel, but you still have all these sort of Jackass imitators and that sort of thing.
So. Right.
Yeah, that's true. Jeff and I were talking yesterday about David Blaine, the guy who locks himself in an ice cube for a week and all that. And he didn't do much this year, did he? Or was it?
Do people even still care about him, though? I mean, I thought there was sort of a backlash to his kind of.
Well, this year was the year of Chris
Angel. It's Chris Angel, right? Yeah. He's going with the Britney Spears. That's a big deal.
So what is Chris Angel's claim to fame?
He's a jerk. That's what he does for a living.
His
right?
hair.
Well, he was supposed to have helped
well
stage
coiffed hair.
Britney's comeback, but we don't know exactly what he did with that.
No. Does she? She just had has a new album out, right?
Well, it's a little
theoretically
recently. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it any good? Have you guys heard it?
It got good reviews.
Yeah, I think people were surprised by it. I mean, it's not anything deep by any, but for a sort of disposable.
Not what you would expect, obviously.
Well, I think it got good reviews because it was graded on just this gigantic curve, because I think people would expected her to just kind of trail off in the middle of a song and,
cry,
shave something.
Shave, wonder where, you know, a bag of Cheetos was or something. So, I mean, I think that the fact that there were actual songs and she finished them and they were somewhat good, there were people like, hey.
I think that it was not very Britney heavy either, which is maybe why it got good reviews. I mean, she's probably only in the studio for like 20 minutes.
Right.
So whatever else they had to add to the songs to make them good.
Can you imagine having to work around her schedule, though? You know, you get a call at like 1 in the morning. She's like, hey, I want to record. And then she comes by, lays down something, then goes up to like whatever club will let her in anymore.
Well, do you guys think she's talented? I mean, aside from her extraordinarily large personal problems.
I don't think she's extremely talented, but I mean, I think at her best, like with the song "Toxic" a few years ago. I mean, I thought that was a great package. The video, the song, I thought it worked as sort of prepackaged disposable pop.
I think she's more savvy than talented. Mm-hmm. I think she can recognize things. I don't know. I mean,
she
now.
Is, or her people are.
Well, yeah. She was once a really good blank canvas, you know. And right. When she has good people working around her, she, you know, turns out to be, you know, pretty. Amazing, but obviously she should not be left to her own devices.
That's an interesting point, though, that she was a blank canvas because, you know, I look at her and there is part of me that thinks, God, she was a product from the time she was, you know, 12 or 13 years old. It's really hard to end up normal when that's been your life for the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Even when she was tiny. I mean, she was in the Mickey Mouse Club and all that. I mean, so she's never not been in show business, I don't think. And, I mean, her mom's crazy and, God, the poor girl. I don't know. I feel bad for her.
So you can grow out of that. I mean, Justin Timberlake sort of had the similar sort of roots, and he's sort of become more creative, you know, musician than she is.
I think it's like just an idea of like if you want to move to that next level of like actually being an artist rather than a product or you know, a celebrity. And Justin Timberlake clearly wanted to do that and studied other people, learned things, you know, he learned how to play his own instruments and things like that. And so he developed the talent he already had. I think her problem is she probably has like that same sort of nugget of talent that he had, but she's just kind of like let it atrophy over the years.
I don't know if she ever actually wanted that. I mean, I think she just wanted the fame.
Yeah, and she wanted to be famous.
And the shopping and, you know, all that sort of thing.
Right, right.
I don't think she wanted to be a musician, which is, I think, what Justice is trying, you know, Justin wants to be Stevie Wonder or Michael Jackson.
And what about, now I'm going to, I have her name right here and it's escaping my mind, the girl who's been wandering around London in jeans and
Amy Winehouse.
Amy Winehouse, yeah.
She's fantastic.
Extremely talented, right? But major issues. Do you see her emerging from this as a talent to be reckoned with, or is she on the verge of collapse?
I'm not sure we'll ever see another album from her.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously the depths of whatever is going on with her addiction is, you know, I mean, that's some serious stuff. But I mean, if you look at, I was looking online at some pictures the other day, and there was a picture of her like 2 years ago, and she probably weighs 40 pounds more, and she's still incredibly thin.
Right.
And, you know, looks fantastic. And then, you know, 2 years later, here she is looking like death warmed over, wandering around Knightsbridge or wherever she lives. And it's just, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure she could get it together. I mean, that's to try to concentrate on making a record and not being addicted to 40 different kinds of mind-altering substances is a tall order for anybody.
I think she's more in the category of Pete Doherty now, you know, somebody who was talented at one point but just can't find their way out of whatever demons they have and kind of surround themselves with people who, you know, support that and help them go down that path. And I think, you know, like the culture is just kind of vultures, and they want her to be, you know, Amy Winehouse of falling down, running around jeans, you know, they want those stories to be true, or they want more of them. And I just don't think there's much of a way out of that.
Do you think that there will come a time when our culture doesn't sort of get titillated by people who run into major problems? Because it does seem like when actors or singers or athletes or famous people have problems, the first response is never empathy. It's first we sort of are excited to read about it, and then people kind of make fun of them, and then they become kind of the butt of a joke. Is that sort of unique to this time, or is that something that we'll get beyond at some point?
I think it's always sort of been the case. I mean, it's nice to have many more avenues to read about it. You know, when Marilyn Monroe was writing, didn't have TMZ.com, but I think that feeling has always been there.
Talk about TMZ for a minute, because that is a kind of a weird phenomenon, and there's a TV show now.
There's a TV show now as well.
Can you explain what that does?
What, the TV show or just TMZ.com in general?
Well, the TV show, I guess, and it's just the whole site basically does the same thing.
I mean, basically, it just, you know, the freshest gossip you can find, you know, photos from people's cell phones of, you know, stars behaving badly. You know, they post them immediately and people can, you know, can look at them immediately. Whereas, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, you had to rely on, you know, magazines or newspapers, which is going to be several days after the event, if not a month or so after the event. So it's much more immediate now than it ever was before.
Well, I think now with the advent of the internet, I mean, everyone feels like they're entitled to their super important opinion. I mean, everybody's got a blog and you can get your YouTube account. And I think this phenomenon of everyone being, you know, kind of their own little, you know, personal soapbox machine is, it makes the process of this super intensity a lot more apparent. But I think that certainly people have always been titillated by gossip and about the, you know, the wacky goings on at, you know, politics or the court or wherever it was. I mean, people, I think people have always kind of been jerks about that type of thing. I mean, it's interesting to hear about people's terrible problems.
Well, I mean, I think it used to be, you know, at first people were like titillated by celebrities. Then they were titillated by people who were famous for not really doing anything, who were just like celebrities because they were celebrities. Like, you didn't have to be an actor or singer or anything like that.
Cato Kaelin.
Yeah. And now you're kind of fascinated by people who are fascinated by these people, like Perez Hilton. So, I mean, it's just kind of going down a wormhole to where, you know, anybody just sitting around is a celebrity, you know, because it's, I always joked back in, you know, the early days of the internet that I wanted to like have a fan site of a fan site of somebody else's actual website and just go like, but that's kind of what it is now. I mean, you know, you look at sites like, you know, TMZ or The Superficial or or What Would Tyler Durden Do? And, you know, that's what they do. That's, and people like them for it.
It's pretty amazing. We had somebody on the show not too long ago talking about the amount of hours that people spend at work actually working as opposed to doing other things. And I would be curious to know how many hours it costs American businesses to have sites like TMZ and everything else out there.
But it makes them so much happier to be able to look at Britney Spears any moment of the day.
They're in a better place.
Exactly.
Andrea Grimes of the Dallas Observer, Carrie Darling of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and Zach Crane are my guests. He's from D Magazine. We are talking about the year in pop culture 2007. You can join us after the break and talk about whatever you want. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Informal Courses for Adults, offering gift certificates for anyone on your list who loves the arts, languages, writing, history, or travel. Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking about the year in pop culture with Zach Crane, who's senior editor of D Magazine, Carrie Darling, pop culture critic for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and Dallas Observer staff writer Andrea Grimes. You can join us by emailing think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. An email from Bill asks about Dallas pop culture, and we'll get to Fort Worth in just a minute. He says, I thought the most memorable pop culture event of the year was the Beard fundraiser at Club Dada, where Brave Combo plays, as well as new local groups like the Felons and Airline play, all performing gratis to raise money. What about the local music scene? Is there more going on than people think?
Bill Holston.
It is, so you
know,
Bill
Holston. Bill Holston, yes, of course. Okay. Yes, the Beard of It was super fun. All 5 minutes of it that I remember.
Are you in the Britney Spears kind of category?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's tragic. Shave my head in the bathroom in a minute. Gosh, what is going on in local music, Zach?
What is going on, Andrea?
You guys have to at least talk about Jeff Whittington's band.
What is the, what are they called? 100 something?
The 100 Inevitables.
Yeah. They're good.
They're awesome.
I will say that I am tremendously proud of Amanda Newman and the work she's done at Club Dada. She recently became a co-owner. And that club down there is really keeping that strip on a strip of Elm Street alive. I mean, Dada has always got some good stuff going on. I don't know. I think people have been doing a lot of complaining lately about how nobody in the Dallas music scene cares about the Dallas music scene, but they don't seem to see that complaining about the fact that nobody cares is caring. So don't get down, everybody.
People are still going to shows, aren't they? I mean, I don't get out that much, but I've been to places where the crowds are there and people are having a good time.
I think they're going to event shows like the Beer to Fit or, you know, particularly well-marketed kind of big shows, even with local bands. But I don't see a lot of people kind of going out on your average, you know, Wednesday or Thursday.
It's just, I mean, back in the day, Thursdays were the big night in Deep Ellum, and, you know, I'd jump around to like two or three different clubs and there were tons of different good bands. And now all the good bands are probably to the point where they can tour, so they're not in town as much. And then there's a smaller amount of bands, and there's fewer of those bands that can actually headline. So it's there's not really something that people can rally around yet. Mm-hmm. But I think it's coming. I mean, it's all cyclical. They need more places to play, and I think they need more open-minded bookers at some of these other places. I think there are great ones. I mean, Chris over at Granada, and mm-hmm. obviously Amanda at Club Dada, and
Chelsea Callahan,
Chelsea, and the guys over at the Cavern. It's just, you know, it's something that's going to take a little time to coalesce. But you know, I think, you know, in a year or two, it'll come back around.
I wasn't here in the '90s, but from what I understand, people used to just go out to Deep Ellum and just hit different clubs, no matter who was playing. And my sense is that doesn't really happen as much anymore. People go to see a specific band and then go back to, you know, wherever they live. So it'd be nice to see more of that sort of come back. But on the flip side, I mean, so there were some really good records by some North Texas, you know, musicians this year. The St. Vincent record, you know, Midlake broke big in Europe, you know, headlining, you know, large halls in England. They're probably better known over there than they are here. So, I mean, there were definitely some positive things happening for local music this year.
Mm-hmm. Where are people hanging out specifically in Fort Worth these days?
Well, that's another thing. It's sort of the equivalent of, not quite the same as what's going on in Deep Ellum, but the whole 7th Street Strip, you know, is sort of gone now with the Rec Room is gone, the Black Dog is gone, because they're revamping the 7th Street corridor between the Cultural District and downtown. It's going to be a lot more upscale with, you know, mixed use and that sort of thing. The Montgomery Ward building, what they've done with that is kind of the first in that. So a lot of the places where people used to hang out in that area are gone. So people are just kind of waiting to see what happens next. A new sort of jazz club, whose name is now escaping me, opened last week.
Scat.
A lounge opened in downtown Fort Worth last week. So there are things sort of happening, but I think people are kind of taking a wait-and-see approach right now.
Does upscaling an area kind of kill youth culture?
I think it can. I mean, I think the ideas that they have for Deep Ellum, from what I can tell, is sort of turning it into like West Village 2, which West Village is fine. It's just I don't think we need another in Deep Ellum. And I think they're sort of trying to create...
more Ann Taylor Loft.
Right. Well, like, you know, in the way those things are designed, it's like sort of a false sense of history. They're like supposed to look like these things that have been around for ages. And, you know, in Deep Ellum, we have buildings that have actually been around for ages that are historical. And, you know, I think that's you're better served to actually putting the money back into Deep Ellum, at least, into what you've already got there. But they've made it really tough to open up a new club. So I think you have to scale those things back before you see the actual... reemergence of Deep Ellum.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Bill in Garland. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I'm interesting. I'm finding this really interesting. And I had a question. You know, we were talking about pop culture kind of on the national scale a minute ago. You guys were kind of dishing about Britney Spears and so forth. And I guess my question is, when we bring it down to more of the local scale, where these are people we actually know, for example, like with Carter Albrecht, does it become a little bit more difficult to dish? I mean, we could easily, you know, question his decision to wash down his very first dose of Chantix with a cocktail. And at what point, you know, does the person being local and someone who we might know their friends and family, does the celebrity gossip thing then suddenly seem distasteful or unpleasant? And I'll take my answer off the air.
That's a great question. Thanks, Bill.
Well, I think the, you know, kind of vitrolic celebrity gossip should always seem distasteful. Unfortunately, Britney Spears for all intents and purposes, isn't a real person for most people. She's a picture on the internet or a voice on a record, increasingly just a picture on the internet. And so I think obviously when you're talking about someone you knew or someone your friends knew, you know, certainly people are more reluctant to kind of say the things that they would normally say about Christina Aguilera. But I think there was some pretty serious stuff said about Carter and his, you know, lifestyle. So I don't think it stopped a lot of people, although it may have changed their tone a little bit. I'm not sure it necessarily shut that down.
Right. I mean, it was, you know, it was tougher to divorce yourself from it if you knew him. But I mean, there, any time it was blogged about, there would be 30 or 40 comments, and you know, a lot of those were negative. And so I don't think people really shied away, like Andrea said, from really carving him up like they would anybody else. And you know, I don't know. It was, but yeah, it was tough to see some of that just because I knew him.
It is amazing to me when you go on the internet where people can just sort of leave comments anonymously. The vicious things that people say sometimes, and you wonder sort of where that comes from.
Well, I think they're, you know, sort of cloaked by the fact that no one really knows who they are on the internet. I mean, I think, again, I think that desire has always been there, but you couldn't do that before. You know, if you had to write a letter to the editor to print in the Morning News or the New York Times, they'd want your name and your address and your phone number or whatever, but now you can just leave messages and, you know, anonymously. So I think that sort of, you know, that opens that well of people can just, you know, can be hateful.
I find it so frustrating because I get a fair amount of hate mail at work, and I need context for my hate mail. Like, I need to know whether or not what this person's saying to me is credible, right. You know? So I need to, I would love it if people would just send me their names, you know? But that anonymity is so, you know, enticing, and I really think it brings out the worst in people
people. It's a mob mentality. I mean, if you're in a crowd, then nobody's going to know that it's you. And
right.
It's easy. I mean, sometimes it's good because sometimes you get the unvarnished truth, but sometimes you'll just get somebody who's looking to, you know, stir it up, and that can just derail things. It derails mm-hmm. the discussion, and all of a sudden it's not about what people are talking about. It's about what this guy has brought up that maybe the person doesn't even believe or even know or anything. It's just, it's an ender.
Some people are just trolls.
Right, yeah.
So do you try to Google people who hate mail you?
Absolutely.
I do that too.
Yes.
I want to know.
Mm-hmm. I seriously need to know if I should trust what they have to say. I'm willing to believe that I'm hateable. I just need to know.
Well, getting back to the, you know, do we let local people or does the media let local people off the hook just because they're local or treat them differently? I mean, there was, you know, I think Tony Romo gets tons of, you know, bad and good things written about him, you know, Jessica Simpson or Lane Garrison who have local ties. So I don't think that necessarily people let them off the hook just because, or treat them differently, just because they may have local roots here.
But then Tony Romo and Jessica Simpson both, they're local, but they have sort of, they're national mm-hmm. in a way that Carter Albrecht maybe wasn't. Do you, what about the whole Jessica Simpson, Tony Romo thing? Is it just because they're this like hot young couple? Is there some reason to care about their relationship other than the fact that they're both good looking and wealthy?
Are they a couple?
Aren't they?
I think.
Are they a couple?
Maybe.
I think they were, there were
mentions. I thought
mentions,
he was with Carrie Underwood.
But yeah, I thought he
old.
Had moved.
I may be like a week behind the times or something.
I don't know.
We went and researched this. I think they, I don't know. I think they've been spotted together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Tony Romo is going to be a big deal no matter what because he's the... Because he's the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and there's like certain...
$63 million, right? Is that his new deal?
Yeah. And there's certain, you know, there's certain jobs in sports that are more iconic than others. Quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, shortstop for the New York Yankees. Back in the day, not currently, but like point guard for the New York Knicks. Those are things that no matter who you are, what you look like, that's going to be a bigger deal. It just so happens that Tony Romo has got a good smile, kind of handsome.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Nick in Dallas. Hi, Nick.
Hello. Quick question. I run a record label, and I just moved here from Chicago to Dallas, so I kind of have a different perspective. Curious about what we talked about earlier with music. I'm trying to apply the download aesthetic of iTunes and mix it with vinyl records. I would be curious to see, I'm trying to take out the CD element, what you guys think about that, taking the CD out, kind of like what Radiohead did.
Do you mean like releasing a vinyl record and then allowing people to just download the MP3s?
That'd be it.
That is awesome. That's the coolest thing I have ever heard in my entire life.
Because Radiohead did it, and now I do Mission Label, mm-hmm. which was in Chicago, and now I moved back home to Dallas, and we have a lot of great music here, but nationally I think I want to take the same model to everybody I've worked with.
I think that's totally cool. I think it's nice to have something tangible, you know, so you feel like you've bought something. I think that's why I have a real problem downloading stuff from iTunes, because I feel like I don't have anything.
Right.
You know, like my $13 just disappeared, poof. especially when I know I can get it for free on Acquisition or Kazaa. Not that I would ever do something like that.
See, I have such a guilty conscience. I would never do that. I'd be the one person that would, you know, get caught and have to pay.
Yeah. Well, the prospect of getting caught is scary. But as long as you don't upload, you're fine.
Oh.
Well. But yes, Nick, the records are fantastic. Please give us records.
What do you like about records? The sound? Is it the is there just a warmth, or what is the
just
difference?
Just the fact that they're tangible
and big.
And big.
Yeah.
You know?
And you can frame them now. You can put them on your wall and show off your great taste.
That's funny, because I would think that a lot of, you know, marketers and researchers would assume that the kids would want everything entirely portable. But I guess what it is you want both, right? You want
well,
be
the
able
kids
to,
do.
Well, I think most people do. But I think there's mm-hmm. a, you know, small segment. I think there was actually a bump in sales for vinyl last year. You know, it was from 1% to 2% of the market. I mean, it's always going to be small. It's a niche market. But I think there will always be people, like people who want hardback books, who want something tangible and big. I think they'll be a minority, but I think they'll always be there.
I'm trying to bring back the cassette myself.
The cassettes are nice, too. Cassettes aren't all bad.
The big deal about records for me is that it makes me listen to it more, like be more of an active listener. I mean, you have to get up and drop the needle.
You have to pay attention.
You can't just you can't skip around. You can't just get, I listened to 40 seconds of this. Now I want to move on to the next thing. I mean, you have to just sit there and listen. But
Jeff wants to know, Jeff Whittington, our producer, if you think the Radiohead thing was a leader phenomenon.
It can be, but it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to work for smaller bands. But I certainly think there's a ton of bigger bands that could absolutely do it. I mean, mm-hmm. Dave Matthews Band could do that because they have the fan base. Pearl Jam could do that. There's a ton of them. U2 could do that. Pretty much like most of the big bands that have the built-in fan bases could do that.
A band that's people are more casual about, I don't think it wouldn't support it as well.
No, I mean, like Britney Spears, if she had done that, I don't really think there's a whole lot of people out there who would have said, I really need to pay $13 for this CD. They'd have been like, oh, I'll check it out. I'll give you 0 cents and $0.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We are talking about pop culture in the year 2007. Let's go next to Stephanie in Dallas. Hey, Stephanie.
Hi. I was wondering, you guys were talking about Deep Ellum and how it's kind of dying and how people don't go out on, like, random Thursday nights anymore. Do you? I'd like to hear what your guests think about, like, the homeless and the criminal element that kind of came in, and so people don't feel safe going down there anymore. So unless you have a specific band in mind, you don't just go down there.
I think perhaps the homeless / criminal element is exaggerated. I don't know. I'm a little white girl and I go down there all the time by myself. And it's pretty easy just to tell somebody that you don't have any spare change or give them a cigarette. So I don't know. I have felt far more threatened kind of walking to and from my car off of Lower Greenville. And actually, I think if you look at the crime rates, the crime rate in Lower Greenville is violently, at least, is worse than Deep Ellum. So I think Deep Ellum gets a bad rap on that point. It's a very safe place, and you're not going to die if you go down there, guys.
Go ahead, Gary.
It's also kind of a vicious circle, because the fewer people go down there, it looks more abandoned, so people feel less safe than they probably actually are. So if more people actually went down there, I think most would probably be fine. But, you know, they drive down there and they see abandoned storefronts and dark streets, so of course they feel unsafe, even if there's nothing actually, you know, dangerous going on.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there was a bit of a problem maybe 3 or 4 years ago that wasn't completely out of hand, but I don't think the people down there in the city moved fast enough to sort of cut the head off the snake. I don't think there was, like, the crime was out of hand, the perception of crime was out of hand, mm-hmm. and they never really stepped in and, like, let people know that you're not going to get, nothing's going to happen to you when you're down here. I mean, I wrote a couple of stories about that when I was at the Observer, And I went down and I hung out, and there was never as much crime as there was just like the sort of like an ominous feeling, something that could have been easily, you know, sent away with like more lights, more cops, a few other things, and they just kind of let it fester.
And I guess some of that is perpetuated too by word of mouth. If, if the last person that went down there said, "Oh, it was kind of weird."
Well, that's the the thing they didn't do enough to counteract, and they're getting it now.
Zach Crane, Andrea Grimes, and Carrie Darling are here. We are talking about the year in pop culture. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. After the break, we will talk about the year of the iPhone.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Informal Courses for Adults, offering gift certificates for anyone on your list who loves the arts, languages, writing, history, or travel. Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Andrea Grimes, who's a staff writer for the Dallas Observer, Zach Crane, senior editor of D Magazine, and Carrie Darling, pop culture critic for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. You can join us today to talk about popular culture 2007 by emailing think@kera.org or calling 1-800-933-5372. So we took a little survey in the break. Nobody here has an iPhone. What did you guys think of the launch, the repricing, the branding, the hype?
I think it's the first thing. I mean, it looks more of it looks like just another Apple success, but I think it's the first thing they haven't like 100% just, you know, come out guns blazing. I mean, the fact that they had to reprice it and that there was a little bit of that. I mean, I think that shows. I mean, that's. How long was it before they repriced it? Like a couple of months?
Yeah, like a month.
It was less than that, wasn't
it? Yeah.
I think it was about a
month. So, I mean, that just shows you that it didn't go, you know, it didn't do as well as they maybe hope. I don't think it revolutionized things the way, like the iPod did.
I wonder what this does next time they launch something big to all the early adopters, or if those kinds of people who must have everything first. I got on a plane the day it was launched, and there was a guy sitting next to me, you know, like he'd been in line and everything. I wonder if those people will wait, or if they still...
No, I think there's a buzz off of being an early adopter. I mean, you know the prices are going to fall or that the technology is going to change, but you like being the fact that you're the only one in your block for the first month
exactly.
or so to have it. So,
well, that's kind of the Apple fan mentality. I mean, you know, you can kind of screw them around by, you know, lowering the price a month later, but at the same time, in their minds, they're still the guy who had it the day it came out, you know? So it's going to take a lot. Steve Jobs is really going to have to do a lot worse by Apple fans than that to turn them into, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just an abominable failure. It was just like the first thing they've done in a while that just hasn't like gone through the roof.
I want to see like the awesome iPhone that comes out in like a year that has like 12 more features.
Takes calls for you.
Yeah.
It's yeah, like deals with the people you don't want to actually return calls from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Voice recognition, just so I can just talk into it and it figures out what to say.
It could do the show. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Jesse in Fort Worth. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I had a question. I don't remember the guy's name who you got sitting there with you, but he mentioned Dave Matthews and Pearl Jam. It just happens that... Well, it just happens that my favorite bands are in order, Dave Matthews, Pearl Jam, Tori Amos, thanks to my wife, and a few others. I wonder if there's any local bands that aren't necessarily in the same sound style, but it's kind of the same grassroots touring, heavy on creative side that I should be looking for in the local scene.
Yes, I would make some recommendations for you. Sarah Jaffe, you should check out if you like Tori Amos.
She's great.
She is fantastic and way better than Tori Amos. Oh, gosh, I was at the Barley House last night, and there was a band that sounded just like the Dave Matthews Band. No, maybe that was Sunday night. Who were they? Preston Gray? Preston Gray sounds like the Dave Matthews Band. Man, just go out to some clubs and listen to some music. Find some stuff. You'll get some stuff.
That's... That's going to look good on the front, on the sticker in front of a CD. When
just find some stuff.
I checked it out. It was good.
It was all good, right. Good stuff.
It was all right stuff.
So this was in my introduction. The big must-have toy for the year is the talking Jesus doll. And I have to wonder.
The white talking Jesus doll.
Well, and I mean, look, I mean no disrespect whatsoever to anyone.
Because I'm sure Jesus is listening.
Well, but I'm curious as to whether, as to what percentage of the audience is people who really want their kids to have this toy because it's an expression of their faith, and what percentage of it is people who are going to take it and perhaps use it in sort of different and more ironic ways.
Yeah, reprogramming will be a key element.
It's at Walmart, so I'd say it's, initially I would have said 50-50, but I'd have to say, I don't know, 75-25. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine like letting an action figure run my kid's life, although I say that being a Star Wars fan growing up, and I probably would have listened if my little Luke Skywalker would have talked, I probably would have done whatever he said, so...
Well, but there's even a question as to whether it would be like a sacrilege for a kid to be, you know, playing game. You know,
yeah,
I've never seen kids play in a sort of biblical fashion.
It seems really tacky to me. I mean, it's such a like an extreme dilution of what the guy had to say. I mean, surely anyone who you know is kind of down with the Jesus thing would kind of think maybe this is not the right way to approach this.
We don't know exactly what it's saying though, which proverbs he's
right.
No, there's a list of them. I'm sure you can find out online. But
are they direct Jesus quotes or are they like passages?
Like wash the dishes, or I think it would be tacky as if they came out with like play sets, like you know, Garden of Eden or Calvary Hill or whatever.
All right, we should perhaps move on to the next topic. Sopranos wrapped up this year. Will there be something else of this magnitude?
You mean from the Sopranos or just, I mean, in general as a television
In general,
phenomenon?
Is there something on the horizon that any of you thinks has that kind of impact?
I don't think you can predict that because no one predicted that the Sopranos was going to change TV the way it did. I mean... It's something that you're going to find yourself in the middle of probably, where, you know, in the third episode, even in the third episode of The Sopranos, I don't think anybody was just like, this is going to be one of the biggest TV things ever.
Do you guys see that show as an illustration of what the networks might need to do in order to get that kind of loyal following or an illustration of why they never will at this point?
Well, judging from even without the strike from this season, you know, viewership was off and nothing really caught fire. And even the shows that caught fire last season, like Heroes, experienced a bit of a drop. I think they're, you know, between a rock and a hard place because they can't really do what The Sopranos. I mean, network TV can't compete with cable just in terms of the intensity, for one thing. So they're stuck sort of doing sort of carbon copies a lot of the time.
Have any of you guys seen that show that's supposed to be like Sex and the City, but it's on a regular network?
The one about the guys?
With Lucy Liu. No, there's like four women.
I don't think that's come out yet.
It hasn't come out yet.
Oh, it hasn't. Okay.
It's, is it Cashmere Mafia?
It's supposed to be in the spring.
Is
I think they're
really
saving it.
Cashmere Mafia?
It is.
Yeah.
But there was another one, too, that was...
Big Shots about the
four
guys.
Yeah, that's guys. The guy version.
It's the guy version of Desperate Housewives, and it's okay, but yeah, it's nothing you would set your TiVo for necessarily.
Harry Potter, very big year. I wonder if this phenomenon will continue with kids who have no memory of waiting in line for the books and the excitement about release parties and all that.
I think it will, just because I think the thing that kicked it off was the books itself. And so, I mean, there's not going to be that sort of phenomenon again, but there will be, I think the books will stand up and, you know, the kids will always be into them. It's just...
The thing about Harry Potter is that it's kind of like Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I mean, you know, the first time a kid discovers a Harry Potter book, it will be the first time they've discovered the Harry Potter book. It's not dated. It's timeless, you know. And so I remember thinking, I mean, when I was a kid, I read the Babysitter's Club books. And, like, I thought I was the first person who had ever read a Babysitter's Club book. Because they just kind of have that newness to them, you know, where it's... I mean, Harry Potter has a lot of cultural context, so I don't know. Maybe having the movies and all of the kind of products that go along with them might kind of sway your judgment. I mean, obviously, you'd find out as a 4-year-old what Harry Potter was about and then actually be able to read the books as an 8-year-old or something. But I don't know. I mean, the Harry Potter stories are just so awesome that I can't see it not being awesome forever.
What I find interesting is now is that every fantasy series is now, it seems, is being optioned. I mean, obviously the Golden Compass just came out, even though it wasn't a huge blockbuster. Right. It only did $26 million this past weekend. So I guess it's questionable whether they'll do the other two novels in the series as movies. But still, it's just like they're optioning anything with some sort of, you know, supernatural wizard type character or anything, mm-hmm. which I find kind of interesting.
Did you guys happen to see the Jerry Seinfeld B movie?
I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. I saw it. Well, I have a 3.5-year-old, so I went the Friday it came out.
So, I did not see the movie, but I think I saw a movie's worth of advertisements for it. There were all kinds of crazy, I guess on NBC, mm-hmm. just really lengthy segments. I didn't really understand that. Is there anything in the movie to justify that kind of marketing? Or maybe that explains that kind of marketing.
I think that justifies it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's Jerry Seinfeld, and he can basically do what he wants.
Yeah, I think NBC would have, you know, if he wanted to run a 30-minute infomercial every week, which he sort of did, they would have said, whatever, because we'll have you on an episode of 30 Rock. I mean, they just wanted whatever. So he could have, I mean, they could have just had him sitting in a chair talking about, like, his favorite lines of B-movie, and they'd have been like, we're in, so in. Can you do it again next year?
So they're hoping that he'll come back and do a series for them, you think?
They just need
sure
something.
Love it. Yeah.
He could probably, if he wanted some sort of Soprano show on, he could get that on. It'd just be the darkest language ever, and they'd automatically greenlight it.
You know, we've talked a lot, and particularly on this show, about peak oil and all that. Have we reached peak croc production for adult consumption? Does anyone think, you know what I'm talking about, those plastic shoes?
Oh.
But kids love them. But
you said crop production.
We are growing so much.
You know, Zach,
corn.
I love you, but you'll have to come on a different show.
That's such a segue.
You know, agricultural issues.
I did actually have some stuff printed out for that.
They're so ugly.
They are, but there's a lot of grown-ups wearing them out in public.
Yeah, they're
where?
Oh, I see them. Yeah, they're the Earth
they're
shoes
all
of
mm-hmm.
this century, I think.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't remember Earth shoes.
No, I don't know.
You can just do a Google search. And
are they comfortable?
Them. I have them for the garden, and they're okay, but they're not so comfortable.
You wear them outside
of the garden,
don't
you? My mother has like four pairs of them.
No, I do not.
7-Eleven, going to get a soda, throwing the Crocs.
Well, you know, they make Croc flip-flops that are less obnoxious. I would suggest Croc flip-flops would be a good thing to move on to if
exactly
you have a Croc problem.
Thing?
Huh?
Aren't those?
No, they look like flip-flops, like thongs.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they have Heelys in them?
Oh, Croc
they do not
Heelys.
Have
you
Heelys.
Know what? I think next year we'll be doing a show about the most popular toy ever, and that'll be it. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. What do you guys think are the big things coming up for next year? Are you able to sort of make predictions about pop culture? Is there something on the horizon that didn't quite hit yet?
I don't know. I mean, like, I think the writer's strike puts a cramp into, like, a lot of the other things. And then, I don't know.
Politics more in entertainment? We didn't see a lot, and we've talked about this before on the show, Carrie, but we didn't see war movies really hit in the ways.
No,
that people
not only
might have
did
thought.
They not hit, I mean, they were huge bombs, just about all of them. I think part of the reason why is I think people don't necessarily want to go to movies to see what they see on CNN, but a lot of it, I think, is just a lot of the movies probably weren't very good. And if there had been one that had gotten great reviews, had been sort of the Little Miss Sunshine of war movies, that had gotten
waiting for that one.
Somebody's pitching that.
Had gotten
Steve
great,
Carell and Battlefield.
Had gotten great word of mouth. People might have put aside their, you know, qualms about going to see a movie about the Iraq War if you know, somebody they had read had said it was very good or friends had told them it was very good. But since the word of mouth on most of them was pretty bad, I think people just stayed home.
And socially, do you think those the yellow ribbon car magnets mean something different today than they did 3 years ago?
I think they mean, well, never mind.
They mean like absolutely nothing.
Yeah, zero. I mean, they have no meaning.
It's
They're
always,
too ubiquitous.
It's like the car ribbons and then, you know, like the Livestrong bracelets. It's always like a great idea when it comes out. And then within 3 months, it's, you know, it's a brown ribbon for your soccer team or whatever.
They're like Croc shoes.
Yeah.
they come in every color. Is that a uniquely American thing, do you think?
You mean like bastardizing something?
I guess so. Yeah, I wouldn't have put it quite so
probably,
colorfully.
I don't know. Maybe Canadian.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, when I go to other countries, I don't seem to see as many of those types of things. But I don't know. I couldn't say that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And do you think the environmental interest that people seem to be showing right now? A lot of people are worried for the first time, thanks to maybe Al Gore, about global climate change and all that. Do you think some of those trends will continue, Or are they sadly kind of a flash in the pan fad? Are people going to continue caring about the environment?
Well, I think certainly as long as oil and gas are as expensive as they are, I think people will show some concern, at least in terms of the cars they drive and that sort of thing, if only for looking out for their own pocketbooks. I think that'll be around for a little while at least.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. It's a trend, but I think it's a trend that has at least a little, you know, even once, you know, the people who are just kind of trend spotters fall off, there'll still be a fair amount of people who have kind of converted their life over to that, mm-hmm. especially because of the gas.
Well, I think people have finally figured out that, like Carrie said, you have to make it in people's own best self-interest to, you know, kind of go green. And now that we've figured that out, you know, I think we can exploit that to its maximum degree. So I hope it works.
Okay. If you guys had to predict how many celebrities will adopt children from impoverished countries in the next year?
Over under.
Yeah. Including or excluding Angelina Jolie?
Oh, you got to right. include her. She's at the forefront. She's like the new Mia Farrow.
I'd set it at 10, and I would take the over.
Mm. Andrea?
I'm going to go with 12 and a half.
I don't even want to know how you
like Siamese twins?
Yeah.
I'll top out at 15.
All right.
Wow, I thought I was picking high.
Well, we'll meet back here in a year with Carrie Darling, Andrea Grimes, and Zach Crane. We've been talking about the year in pop culture. Guys, it was lots of fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro, with production assistance from Maggie Conklin. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.
American Life. Our program is different than other shows on the radio. The kinds of stories we do are different. Like little movies for radio, with characters in some situation, and funny moments, and more emotional moments, and unexpected plot twists. We spend a lot of time looking for stories and ideas you won't hear anywhere else. If you haven't heard us, I hope you'll listen. This week.
Saturdays at noon on KERA 90.1 Radio Unlimited.
It's 12:59. You're listening to your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, Radio Unlimited. And Tyler, you're listening to K261 CW 100.1. We're at K202DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman. Right now we have 70 in Dallas, 52 in Sherman and Denton, 59 in Fort Worth, and 46 in Wichita Falls. It's also 75 in Tyler at 1 o'clock.
I'm Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, the problem with planning. Cato Institute Senior Fellow Randall O'Toole believes government planning of everything from zoning ordinances to mass transit takes far more away from quality of life in America than it adds. We'll talk to him about the reasons why and about what might happen if we move to a system where government pulled out of the planning business altogether. The conversation begins right after the news from National Public Radio.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.